brother small. Lay a big hit and pass a kick ball. This game is for us all. From Seattle down toward the Keys, this game is you, this game is me. Cast dogs and steer, be the tree. This game is America, so sing it loud with me. College football forever. College football forever. Downtown LA, Starkville sip. One week you're up next, take a dip. Run the rock or let it rip. All say, can you sing it with me?
We just stepped on our feet with a hostile boot and brought our nose.
Whoa, Nelly!
College football forever. College football forever.
College football is a year-round discussion with these two. Here's JC and Morgan. Mike Morgan of ESPN and JC Sherbert of 24/7 Sports have you covered, beginning right now.
Good morning if you're watching us and listening to us live. Good afternoon, good evening, whenever you might be listening or watching us later on in the day, the week, whatever the case may be. It is JC and Morgan nearing career episode number 300, if I'm not mistaken. I'll do the math a little bit later on. Mad Dog, keep me straight on that. I think we're really close to 300. And we had a little bit of delay in between episodes. Ordinarily, I would blame JC because I just like blaming JC for things, but this is totally on me. My basketball schedule has been nuts, combined with ESPN games and national radio for Elite Media, which has been great. But it's kept me from kind of a regular schedule on JC and Morgan. We'll get back to that, and we'll also get back to a parade of guests. First one will be next week with Chuck Oliver, who just came out with his quarterback rankings in the SEC. I think I've seen three or four of those lists now. I will say one thing on basketball, JC, and I know you're a basketball fan as well and love the sport. This year I've seen Michigan in person, Arizona in person, Duke in person twice. I've had Florida. I guess the only potential number one seed I haven't seen is UConn. I'm calling it the year of the super teams. I'm not saying that there won't be upsets. I'm just saying those teams at the top are super teams. They are ridiculously loaded. And what, again, the ever-changing dynamics of the portal, what those programs have been able to do is backfill any gaps with guys that graduated or what have you with immediate productivity in the portal. And they're not like your average program that has to roll the dice and take a chance on a guy in the portal who may or may not be good. No, they just get freaking ballers. And then they add that to blue chip All-American recruits. And they have ridiculous coach. Watch John Shire. For those that really love the game of basketball, watch the way they play the game, and you'll know what a really well-coached basketball team looks like. Watch what Coach May does at Michigan compared to what they were doing with Juwan Howard, which is picking fights in the layup and the handshake lines. Watch what they do and the stuff that they run. If you really appreciate the game, you appreciate well-coached teams, not just really talented. Well, watch Todd Golden of Florida. It's a super conglomeration of talent, experience, not one of these Cal teams with a bunch of 19-year-olds that are all five stars and then get worked over in March. Talent, experience, and elite coaching. And I don't see many teams being capable of playing with those teams. I could be wrong, But I'm just telling you right now, this is the year of the super team. I can't recall a time I've seen that many teams, because we're talking about four, maybe five, that are so friggin' elite. The first few rounds might be a little boring, quite honestly. The final four has a chance to be historically good. That's my one basketball note for the show. We got a lot of football notes to get to. JC, I'd be remiss if I didn't start with someone you and I know and covered in the passing of Lou Holtz. I had that picture behind me. This got a lot of traction on social media, quite more than I thought it would, actually.
You look young.
Yes.
Like baby-faced.
You know, I was on with a sports talk show host, and I thought of you because he made this analogy. First off, if the fashion police are watching, I will pay my fine and settle out of court, because that is an awful, awful look. But that is in the year 2000. Gosh, I can't believe it was a quarter century ago. But I am in my early to mid-20s. Yeah, mid-20s.
You look like a young Bono there.
Well, the guy said on the show yesterday, he goes, you look like Charlie Sheen. And you've made that reference twice before. And all I can say is, having watched a lot of Charlie Sheen documentaries lately, or interviews lately, because he was talking about his documentary, I can't help it. I'm fascinated by the guy. He's lived a lot more exciting life than I have.
Yeah, yeah. His wit, though, like how he kind of talks, he's got like the sense of humor and with certain characters he's played and stuff. Like that's you got some similarities there too.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah, no.
Funny, you know, the way you know.
He's a brilliant guy, and he's just likable. Like, he is all about talking about all his flaws. We don't have enough time in this program to talk about mine, but he'll go and he'll just sit there and talk about every single mistake he's made, and he's made plenty. But I find him fascinating, and he's a terrific actor, and I mean, so many great roles: Wall Street, Platoon, Major League, et cetera, et cetera, and Two and a Half Men. Like, that show is nothing without him. But anyway, the guy on the left of that picture, of course, is Lou Holtz. And I mentioned it, and I had to jog my memory a little bit. That show that we did, it's the afternoon show in Columbia. We didn't have a producer. We didn't have a Mad Dog. We didn't have a Phil Molinax to say, hey, can you give Chuck Oliver a call and make sure he's good to be on at 9:30? So if we did book a guest, it was me typically making a phone call, or a co-host and lining it up. But we never booked Lou Holtz. Those shows were done at a bookstore on the corner of Williams-Brice Stadium. I guess that would be the north end zone. And he would have his practice. He would roll up in a golf cart, see us, grab the microphone, and just start talking to us. And he did that every week. Every week, unsolicited. And loved every minute of it. And then, of course, you know, customers started huddling up around and listening and hanging on every word. And that was the year that they went from he led South Carolina from 21 losses in a row to a successful season, an Outback Bowl win, back when the Outback Bowl meant something. Won an extra game the following year and won another Outback Bowl before things went a little bit sideways. But I got to know Lou as much as you could know Lou without, like, being a golfing partner of his. Fascinating guy. I was thinking about this, how fortunate I have been to cover Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier, two of the most fascinating human beings and, I mean, game-changing Hall of Fame coaches, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't have guys like that anymore. And this is not a knock on the great coaches of today. Like, Cignetti's entertaining in his own way. He's quirky. Kirby's smart. There's not much there. I mean, I have major respect for what Kirby's done. Nick was entertaining in his own way, kind of grouchy, what have you. We don't have the dynamic personalities of Lou Holtz, Steve Spurrier anymore. And I know I sound a little bit like get off my lawn guy when I say that. It's not that. I have nothing against the current coaches. It's more of sometimes it takes time and the passing of somebody like a Lou Holtz to really appreciate how unique he was. The bio speaks for itself. I mean, he took over six programs that were struggling. Took them all to bowl games. Again, when bowl games meant something. His crown jewel, of course, was Notre Dame. He won a national title there in 88. They haven't won one since. Should have won one in 93. If we had a playoff, like even a four-team playoff, Notre Dame would have been in and probably would have won. They beat Florida State that season, and then they wound up losing to Boston College on a last-second field goal. That knocked them out, paved the way for Charlie Ward and company to win it in 93. But a legendary coach, a extremely captivating human being. At 89, he lived a full life. And so just, again, I say RIP, but I also say what an honor to have been able to cover him, JC.
Absolutely. What a life he lived. Always growing up familiar with Lou Holtz because when I was a kid, Tony Rice was from Woodruff, South Carolina, which is probably about 10 minutes from the Sherbert Homestead when I was in high school and, Spartanburg County. You know, same county I'm from. And so we watched those teams, my dad and I, and he always talked about Lou. And, I was kind of beside myself when he went to South Carolina, to be honest with you. I think everybody affiliated with that program was. But, great motivational speaker, a tough, hard-nosed coach, too. People don't realize this if you've ever heard about or participated in or talk to someone who's participated in one of his practices, you'd know that he wasn't quite like split personality, like the Reeve from the movie Nothing But Trouble. And I know you haven't seen it, but it's Dan Aykroyd character, where he was just like, John Candy. I don't think he had any line. No, he played one character that didn't have any lines and then played another that did.
Not a fiver or a dimer for me.
Yeah, Aykroyd played about three different parts. Chevy Chase was in it. Demi Moore was in it.
Yeah, Digital Underground had the theme song.
Yes, your
all
song.
All around the world, the same song. All around
song.
The
world, yeah. Your group there.
My man.
He wasn't quite like that, but he was a disciplinarian of a coach, and that's why he won and all that. But just the life he lived, the journey from – and not many people know this either. Like, he kind of set out his journey when he was at South Carolina in the 60s. He was a young assistant coach. Had gotten hired by a guy named Marvin Bass there, who coached Dan Reeves at South Carolina. Marvin Bass leaves and takes a job in the CFL. I think they forced him out. And they hired Paul Dietzel, who won a national championship at LSU. And Lou stayed on for 2 years there. And while he was there, it was up in the air because he'd just gotten hired and Bass leaves and he was out of a job until Dietzel hired him back. So that's where he made his list of goals. I want to be on the Johnny Carson show. I want to do this. All these goals. And he's talked about this before right there in Columbia, South Carolina. So and then Woody Hayes hired him as an assistant at Ohio State in 68. And then right after that, he got the William and Mary job. And then he's still the winning percentage wise. The winningest coach in NC State football history. He was 719 winning percentage with the Wolfpack. Dave Doran, of course, is the leader in wins. Lou had 33 wins, 12 losses, and two ties. Dave's got 165 wins, and I think he may have 100 losses here pretty soon. I think he's 85 in fairness to Dave Doran. But so NC State hadn't had success. Like, won an ACC title. He's only there 4 years. Takes the job with the Jets, pulls a Bobby Petrino. Resigns before the season, and then just like Bobby Petrino, goes to where? The University of Arkansas. And takes the Arkansas job.
That Jimmy Johnson desperately wanted.
Yes, and took that, replaced Frank Broyles, so he's the guy that replaced the guy. That's always tough. Went 60-21-2. Arkansas was up then, Southwest Conference, all that. Legendary win in the Orange Bowl. Hard working for Frank Broyles, from what the reports say. I think President Clinton was actually the governor of Arkansas at the time. So he takes Minnesota, gets them to a bowl in year two, and Notre Dame comes calling. And that was his dream job, goes there, stayed out, did TV with our friend Tim Brando at CBS for 2 years, and took South Carolina and really is responsible for starting the elevation of that program, which, I know You know, they didn't become a powerhouse, but if you were around in the 90s before he got there, you know that that was basically Kentucky and Vandy, and then South Carolina was a little better. That was about it. Maybe they beat a Mississippi school every now and then, pull an upset every now and then. But I think with that final job, he kind of allowed everybody with the Gamecocks to believe there was a chance, like he always did. And then he did TV for years, and those segments with Mark May, people still miss those. I mean, sure, they were kind of a little staged and corny and emotional at times, but that's one of those things that I personally would look at and go, that's not going to work. But if you talk to college football fans, it was beloved, like the judge segment at the end and stuff, because I'm more of a meat and potatoes, just tell me about ball and let's watch highlights and break it down guy. Don't stage. So I don't care about your acting chops. I mean, you know, I don't want to play, I'm in the minority. People loved that with Mark May and Lou Holtz, and it was outstanding TV. So anyway, rest in power, Lou Holtz. What a life. Prayers to his family with this loss. There's a South Bend, Indiana, about 2 hours from me. There's a memorial service Sunday night. He'll be laid to rest in South Bend next to his beloved wife who passed away a few years ago. So legendary coach in our game. You mentioned the personalities. We've now lost Mike Leach and Lou Holtz. And there'll be more. And you're right. The game does need more personalities. I think with the way with the sports in college are going now, though, it's kind of dampened the sparkle of some guys that can possibly be that these days.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to frame top coaches for this, top coaches for that. I think most people by now agree Nick Saban is the GOAT. I don't see somebody touching what he did at Alabama. And oh, by the way, he did it at LSU too. I will say this. If I have an undermanned team and I'm going into a big game and I need one coach for that one game, I'm not sure I wouldn't take Lou Holtz over anybody. I'm not sure I wouldn't take Lou Holtz over anybody. He was a master motivator. He loved that underdog role. Other than Notre Dame, those were not premier jobs. There's a great clip of when he's the coach at Arkansas, they had to suspend three of their best players before an Orange Bowl game, and they went in there and won it anyway. And they were a heavy underdog.
Oklahoma was number two in the country.
Right.
Oklahoma, Barry Switzer, they beat the snot out of 31-6. That was one of his finest moments.
One of his finest moments by far. I think I sent the clip to you, and we had a little group chat going with somebody who played for Lou, and I just kind of stumbled upon that. That was in the Orange Bowl. I'm not so sure I wouldn't take Lou in just give me one game, a coach that has a few weeks to prepare for it, and he's the underdog. He's the team that's a little bit outmanned. I'm not sure I wouldn't take Lou Holtz for that.
Yeah, in his era, two bowl games sort of mattered, and you know nobody opted out.
Right.
You give him one. I remember he got one of Spurrier's teams, Florida, and then the Sugar Bowl one year.
1991. Yeah.
Heavy favorite in that one. And they just
Jerome Bettis is still running.
Ran it all. And won the
Jerome Bettis game, is so. Still running. Yeah. And he was old school in that, you know, you can't work kids like you could back then. It was two-a-days. It was blocking and tackling drills till you had nothing left to give. That's just the way he ran his operation. And you were never going to out-physical, out-tough a Lou Holtz coach team. That was his signature. Was an assistant under Woody Hayes before he started, got his first break at William & Mary as a head coach. Took them to a Tangerine Bowl, I believe. That was before classification. So William & Mary was in the same group as every other team that put on pads. You didn't have one double A. You just had football. You either played or you didn't. RIP to Lou Holtz. I've gotten to know his son, Skip, very well over the years. I already passed along some condolences to him. Got a lot of things to get to. The JC5 is coming up. I have no idea what it's going to be. That's always exciting for me. Some quarterback rankings are out there. We're getting into talking season, and we will get into guest season here on this program. I mentioned Chuck Oliver, Tim Brando, who, as you mentioned, worked with Lou, will join us. He's a regular. Tom Luganville. We'll probably have Josh Pate on who's been in the news because of an interview as much as anything else. We'll get to all those things. But a quick timeout. Again, we are powered by Advocare, advocare.com. So many of my coworkers have been watching me use Spark before broadcast, just mixing in that powder in with the water. And I give them a sample and they're like, this is a hell of a lot better than a crappy energy drink or coffee. I'm like, yeah, I know. That's why I've been doing it for 13 years. And they're hooked. And they also have taken advantage of a 20% discount. Promo code Mike Morgan gets you 20% on every product. Rehydrate, a better alternative to Gatorade. You've got creatine if you want to bulk up, Gainsbro, without having to deal with Meathead Mickey over at the GNC. Products that'll help you sleep. Beauty products. Collagen. If you want healthy skin, nails, and lips, JC, impress Nat with your newfound metrosexual advances. And I mean that in a good way. All those things can be taken advantage of at advocare.com. Again, promo code Mike Morgan gets you 20% off. Also brought to you by nestandwild.com. Not just the most comfortable mattress in the world, now they got the most comfortable sheets. Check them out, nestandwild.com. Quick timeout, JC5 on the other side.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
Hey folks, want to tell you about our friends at Titan Construction Group really quick. They're a mid-Atlantic-based general contractor, specializes in retail, restaurant, and office construction. TCG strives to separate itself from other general contractors by adding value every step of the process. From project budgeting to estimation, value engineering to construction, they focus on those relationships and not the transaction. Titan builds partnerships one project at a time. Among their clients are Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, Blake Pizza, Home Goods, 15 plus years experience, based in Midlothian, Virginia, and contracted in Virginia, West Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. So get on their website, TitanCGInc.com. That's TitanCGInc.com. Get in touch with Brad if you're in need of a general contractor that focuses on going above and beyond for their clients. That's Titan Construction Group, a proud sponsor of the JC and Morgan podcast.
We're passionate about making sure that the Nest and Wild mattress is the best it can be. Made well and made right. Right here in Tupelo, Mississippi. So how can we do all that? Work. Hard work. And that means something. The Nest and Wild mattress is a movement. It's a pride in where you come from and where you're going. So get comfortable. Because this movement is just beginning.
This is JC and Morgan
on the Chief Sports Network.
College football forever.
That overly dramatic guitar riff can only mean one thing. We are diving into segment two, and we are diving into the JC5.
It's time for the top topics in the sport. We bring the JC5. Number one.
We are muted on the JC5.
I cannot believe I did that. I haven't.
You know what?
I used to do that frequently. Leave me
not anymore
on mute, but I've been excellent with it, and I screwed it up today.
But you know what? It's episode 299. We have official confirmation from Phil. Yeah. I'll bet you come 300, You never do it again.
All right. They
first 299 are on the house. Yeah. But 300 and above, you'll see, you'll never have that happen again.
One of the other shows I'm on is show 800 today. It's daily.
Though, wow.
So. Yeah, it's a daily one. But yeah. Anyway. All right. So I don't know if you read about this or not, but Ross Dellinger had a report. So they're with all the hullabaloo about everything else in college football, they finally decided to fix the bowl system, or to try to fix the bowl system. And I know bowls aren't the most sexy thing to talk about, but fans still love them. Some of the Power Five matchups and bowl games this past year outdrew the Western Conference Finals in the NBA, viewership wise, ratings wise, and we know that drives it. So what one of the plans is, and I've been kind of saying this, I want to get your thoughts on if you were going to just blanket fix the bowl, like if you had your ideas to how to fix it. And a lot depends if you go to a 2014 playoff, maybe it's something else, but let's just stay with the 12, 16 team playoff. And so one of the plans is eliminate the conference tie-ins and just have five, like a 10 bowl collection, like that'd be 20 teams that just slot teams in different parts of different bowls around the country, power versus power conferences. I like that idea, but there's more than one way to do things, Mike. And I think you would agree they're probably not going anywhere, or there's gotta be, because they want programming. And so explain the programming part of it to our audience. And then if it were up to Michael Morgan, what's your ideal structure for bowls?
Well, first off, I would start with the calendar is off on college football in general. I predict week zero will be the new week one pretty soon. You know, we only have 13 weeks this year in college football instead of the 14 we had last year. That's sad to me. Why are we missing out on a week of college football? We don't need to be missing. If anything, we want more weeks. We don't want fewer weeks. But the calendar is off. That's going to have to be restructured at some point. But when it all gets cleared up on the dates and we're doing this thing the way we should be doing it, you know, January 1 should still be a big bowl game day in my mind. I realize that's now kind of reserved for playoff games, but maybe we can do the bowl games early and the playoff games at night. I don't know. Typically now they do one on New Year's Eve, they do three on New Year's Day. But again, I think the calendar is wacky. Don't think we need to be doing it that way. But to go back to your initial question, the reason why the bowl games are going nowhere is because they do get ratings. I don't care if you see seven people in the stands, people watch these games, and there is a dearth of things going on in December that all sports networks in particular are scrambling for programming. You know, basketball hasn't taken off yet. Basketball really takes off with conference play in January. You mentioned that the NBA ratings wise in December is abysmal. People just aren't watching it. So what am I going to do? Am I going to watch America's Got Talent, or am I going to watch a live college football game? Well, if you're a male between the ages of 18 and 65, you're probably going to watch the bowl game over America's Got Talent, The Bachelor, Big Brother, CSI, Law and Order. Like all these shows, it's not like 1980s MASH where you get 20-something million people tuning in because you don't have cable splintering off the audience. Nowadays, those shows do very little. Network TV does very little. But live sporting events, in particular, football and basketball, crush. So the bowl games aren't going anywhere. They fill a spot. Is it discouraging to have – I think the opt-outs actually were down this year. Is it discouraging to have that? Yeah. Does it mean as much as it used to? No. But I think there's still always going to be an appetite – to have college football games in December. And as long as that appetite is there, for every Jimmy Kimmel Bowl that goes under, there's a couple others waiting to pop up like a game of whack-a-mole and take the spot.
Yeah, I think so too. I think also if they were smart, which it's college football,
so they're not.
But you know, you would incentivize players to play in the bowls financially because you can. You know, kind of like that. I think a good thing to take the place of the NIT in basketball would be that NIL tournament deal they do during the regular season that Fox put together, or whoever put it together. But, you know, bowls pay out. You get paid to go to a bowl. Cut the players in on it and incentivize the winners and lose, and you know, give the winners a little bit more, put it in their rev share coffers so they can pay the players out of it. And you'll see how much better the matchups get real fast and how much the opt-outs decrease real fast. So I'm not saying they'll never be opt-outs, but that, with all the talk about money in college football these days, you make it about shared revenue, like everybody gets paid, and everybody's going to be on the same page real quick to go play in the Gator Bowl or wherever. Mm-hmm. And you'll get a better product on TV, you'll get a better game, and that could save it. But I don't know if they're thinking about that or not. I've said for years, do away with the conference tie-ins, because for 35 years, Tampa's had Iowa and Auburn, or Iowa and freaking Tennessee. And I mean, how many more times can you watch that? You know?
Yeah.
In the Outback Bowl or
no, they need a freshener.
Bowl. Yeah,
They need a freshener.
But hey, if you're getting to go play Colorado and Las Vegas, and you're Florida, and you've never played them before, and your fans may want a nice trip during the holiday. You know, you just never know. Yeah. But anyway, that was number one.
Number two.
All right, so speaking of leadership, I don't know why the NCAA continues to fight battles that are trivial. They turned down Trinidad Chambliss based on some paperwork. The kid in the year in question to get the extra year did not play. He played well below the redshirt rules. He's not suing because he was in JUCO and deserves 8 years of college sports. I've looked at the deal, unless there's something I'm missing. They basically said he didn't have documentation and accused him of lying about his health. So they got an injunction. Trinidad Chambliss is ready to go. The NCAA is fighting this. They're appealing to the Mississippi Supreme Court. I don't think they have a snowball's chance of winning there, but maybe it gets kicked up to a federal court and they eventually win and he doesn't play. Number one, do you think the NCAA, it's a two-parter. Number one, do you think the NCAA sometimes needs to pick its battles a little bit better? Because there's other stuff that's more serious they could do stuff about, and they don't.
Right.
Number one, do you think they need to pick their battles more? Number two, let's say Trinidad can't play. This may have gotten lost. Ole Miss got Deuce Knight from Auburn.
Yeah. A
talented freshman. Yeah. Do you think if they lose him, I do think it hurts. But could it be that we see another situation where the surprise starting quarterback at Ole Miss actually overperforms? Your thoughts?
Possibly, but I think a loss of Trinidad Chambliss would be crippling. You know, Ole Miss has gone through a lot this offseason with the whole Lane Kiffin saga. I was talking about quarterback rankings. I've got three of them in front of me. Nobody has Trinidad Chambliss below two in the SEC. It's typically a free for all between Arch Manning, Trinidad Chambliss, and Sam Leavitt of LSU in terms of the top dogs. And I'm a huge fan of the kid's game. I just am. Everything about him, to me, he is special. In a time where we hype up quarterbacks that are not always special, and a lot of it is based on perception or a sizzle reel or whatever else. Trinidad, if you watched what he did last year at Ole Miss, that kid is truly
legit. He's legit.
I don't care if he ever starts a game in the NFL. That's not how I judge how good you are in college. And so that would be, to me, a pretty crippling loss. Deuce Knight might be terrific, and he was a very highly recruited player, as you mentioned. Got a cup of coffee when things went south with Auburn last year, but I would think that would be huge. And yes, the NCAA, you know, we have like rampant tampering going on. and this is the battle you pick, you really want to fix the sport. He's played 1 year of Division 1A football.
Yeah.
This is what we're going after. Like, come on.
I mean, yeah, the Joey Aguilar thing with Tennessee, no chance. I mean,
right.
if they would have ruled in his favor, every junior college player has extra eligibility because there's no way around it. That would have been his eighth year. Trinidad, looking at it, yeah, that year in question at Ferris State, he did not play. I mean, and he was hurt, and then it seems like they're fighting over paperwork. So I don't know, and I think sometimes when you deal with a bureaucracy that's increasingly pathetic, like the NCAA, they know that if they go and try to really force the issue on tampering, that they're going to – maybe they think they'll open a Pandora's box on it because come to find out, everyone's kind of in the same boat. So maybe they're trying to, like, backdoor Ole Miss a little bit with it. I don't know. I don't think they're going to be successful because I think unlike some of these other cases, Trinidad has a good case. And so that's
my thing there. I think he wins it. I think he starts. And I think he puts on a hell of a show even without Lane Kiffin next year in Oxford.
Number three.
You remember when Jason Witten played at Tennessee?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, was really good with the Cowboys. One of the best fantasy football moves I ever made, Mike, was before I was in your league. Witten wasn't doing much with the Cowboys, and I picked him up end of the draft because I remembered him at Tennessee. And I was like, that kid's pretty – all of a sudden, he just blew up. Like the year he blew up, I got him on my fantasy team.
Hall of Famer.
Well, here's going to make you feel old, Charlie Sheen. Cooper Witten, his son – has committed to Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
He is a Brent Venables style linebacker, really aggressive, kind of like his old man, just a good football player. So on that note, do you think that Oklahoma's defensive performance last year, which I would call the best in the SEC at the end of the day, I thought Georgia's defense got better as the year went on and certainly would rival that defense by the time their young players kind of matured at the end. But Ole Miss's offense lit both of them up. We lit Georgia up twice. So, you know, that don't use that as a comparison. But I thought Oklahoma's defense was good. Do you think that's sustainable in Norman? Because this recruiting news today makes me think, yeah, they're going to continue to get dudes and be pretty salty out there on defense.
I agree. And I think it is. I think Oklahoma will be one of those – kind of like we historically did with Alabama and LSU and more recently Georgia, where you just went into the season expecting them to be top five, bare minimum, that top five, like that's like the baseline, and very often competing for the number one defense in the SEC. And so, yeah, I look, there were a lot of people that wanted to fire Venables really early on. That was a head scratcher to me. You know, I think people have learned Lincoln Riley, not such a genius. And I think people have also learned, if they hadn't known already, Oklahoma was going to take a little bit of a step backwards in terms of record in the SEC. So all that happened simultaneously. And meanwhile, Venables is out there and he didn't inherit much. Remember when Lincoln took that job, he took Caleb Williams with him and a number of other key players with him. So it was almost like a rebuild. And so the record was not going to be shiny. I think Venables overall is a good coach and is the right guy for the job. And I think Oklahoma will reap the benefits of not listening to some of the message boards out there and retaining him and letting him build a foundation for what he knows best, which is defense. And yes, I think they're going to be perpetually good, if not great, in the league.
Yeah, I told everybody they were crazy too for wanting to fire him because when he took over, they played no defense whatsoever. It was very optional, as is the Southern Cal defense now. Go figure, right? And in the Big 12, you can, I mean, I looked up some, I was doing some research on TCU early this morning and looked up when they played Oklahoma the last year that Oklahoma was in the Big 12. OU beat them 69-45. Like it was nothing, you know? And when Brent got there, I saw him recruit and I started seeing, oh, stud defender, stud. So he was building that. You know, they weren't going to get there overnight. You had to really, but this past year and then the year before, they really, in the first year in the SEC, they were very competitive and actually quite good on defense. Elite last year. I'm with you. I think it continues. And I think that's the hard part. Oklahoma on offense, Mike, you can walk by the stadium and how many recent Heisman Trophy statues do you see at quarterback at Oklahoma? Yeah. You know, the defense had just gone south, even under Bob Stoops. It was because of the league they were in. So I think he solved the hard part, and I have high expectations for the Oklahoma defense again. I can't wait to see Cooper Witten, yeah, Jason Witten's son, play in that system.
And, yes, I do feel old now that you brought that. That's his son.
Very old.
But this is happening more and more where I'm calling a game, and I'm looking over the depth chart, and I'm like, no. That is the son of the guy that I called 20 years ago. That's happening more and more here lately. It's a little bit scary.
Number four.
Okay, so I keep seeing last episode, we trashed Brendan Sorsby that's going to Texas Tech, transfer quarterback. This week, we're going to trash the Indiana quarterback. I'm just kidding. All right, so Josh Hoover was at TCU last year. Very accurate passer. Ran it through it. He wasn't really a dual threat quarterback in that system. I don't think you have to be a dual threat to run what Indiana's running. I think you just got to do your job and it takes care of itself and you got to be accurate. Are you buying the Josh Hoover could win the Heisman hype?
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Easy, big fella. You went straight from first to fifth gear. Yeah, what happened to second, third?
I'm a hard no, but I've something deep inside of me, because I have doubted Indiana before. Hey, it was proven completely wrong. Careful. Something deep inside of me says, man, maybe not be militant about it. But I just, you know, Fernando Mendoza, to me, we should have seen that. Because the kid took Cal to Auburn and won. I don't care how bad Auburn is or how good Cal was. I mean, you know, almost beat Miami. He's a winner, you know. Yeah. Hoover, good 8-win quarterback. So your thoughts.
Well, look, honestly, I didn't see enough of Mendoza at Cal. You mentioned the Auburn game, and, yeah, I saw the highlights of it. But, like, he was not on my radar at Cal. So when he went to Indiana, I didn't think anything of it. And that was based purely on nothing but a lack of intel. You know, Hoover, I've seen more of, but you know how I feel about accuracy. It's the most important tool of any quarterback, and Mendoza had it. He was a surgeon out there. I don't see Hoover having that type of precision. I don't see him having that level of arm talent. Now, I think he's good. I think it's a good pickup. And to your point, Indiana has such a foundation that is so good right now under Cignetti that he doesn't have to be a Heisman Trophy winner to win a lot of games in Bloomington this year. Just don't blank it up, right? Just go ahead and work with that staff and the talent around them, and you'll be in good shape. But no, he's not on my Heisman list at all, and I'm not even sure if he's going to be the best quarterback in his own conference. But I do think it's a logical pickup. You know, everybody wanted the Sorsby kid. Texas Tech was not going to get outbid. They grabbed him in Lubbock. But then after that, and you weren't going to outbid LSU. What was the transfer market out there? I think they can work with Hoover. I think he's got a skill set that'll fit fine into that offense.
Yeah, accuracy is going to be important. But the good news is Indiana's pretty good on the offensive line. They got some talented receiver. It's going to be, I could see him being successful in that system and having a great year statistically. All right, let's get to the final one.
Number five.
Okay. So this is kind of crazy, but I was thinking about it today. Maybe crazy. Maybe it's not crazy. Because it's rare when somebody at this position wins the Heisman, but it happens more than maybe like a defensive player. Can Cam Coleman win the Heisman Trophy at Texas this year?
No. Because he plays the wrong position. I'm a Cam Coleman guy.
I think I'm going to follow your logic here because I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah, ahead. No. So when I say no, rather emphatically and quickly, don't get that twisted, folks. I think two of the most underutilized players last year were Coleman and Singleton, and they both were wide receivers for Auburn. Singleton's now at Florida, and you watch what he does next year in that offense that'll actually throw him the ball in space and let him run and get yak yards after catch. Coleman is an entirely different kind of player. 6'3", jump out of the gym. Every 50-50 ball is more like a 90-10 ball with him. And combined with Arch Manning, I think is going to have a ridiculous year. So your question is not crazy at all. Cam Coleman might win the Biletnikoff. I could go for that maybe, which is the Heisman for wide receivers. But I the day and age of a wideout winning, you know, first off, you have to have a ton of hype coming in, I believe. And that would be more like a, you know, a Smith situation at Ohio State than it would be a Cam Coleman. We know Cam Coleman. I don't know if the rest of America knows Cam Coleman. And I don't know if Texas's offense is going to be that pass happy to get hit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, the numbers have to be staggering. And I don't know if the numbers will be staggering. And yeah, in chat row, Sam brings up a point. Everything that Cam Coleman does will only build the case for Arch Manning.
Yeah.
It's an excellent point because Arch Manning, I could see definitely being a Heisman finalist.
Name recognition there.
Yeah. Well, and he's good. Look, I'm going to tell you, a little bit of bias for me in that I only had him twice last year. I had him in the win against Oklahoma. He was the best player on the field. I had him in the win against Texas A&M. He was the best player on the field. And in those two games, he beat out John Mateer and Marcel Reed, who a lot of people were hyping up as Heisman Trophy candidates. Arch Manning, for those that want to think he's just a flop and he's, you know, he's overrated, tell me that in November of 2026, and I might have something to buy you, because I don't think he's going to be labeled overrated next year. The kid, he's a player now, and he has all the, like, the NFL scouts didn't miss it. There's some people that'll tell you if he went in the NFL draft this year, he would have been the first quarterback taken, bar none, period. Now, I still think there's some meat left on the bone for him to prove, and I think he will prove it this year. We'll get into the quarterback rankings in a second, but I think he has a huge year. I think Cam Coleman has a huge year. I think Texas's offense with Sark, which has been – last year they didn't block anybody. The run game was almost non-existent. I think those things, when they iron that out, look out for the Longhorns offense in 2026.
Yeah, I'm going to say this about the Texas offense. There's a lot of mouths to feed on that offense, too.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Ryan Wingo, who's an excellent receiver, who's back with Cam Coleman. Then they got Hollywood Smothers and Relic. They said, we're not going to be average at running back at Texas. You know, so they went and got Relic Brown, Hollywood Smothers. And then this kid they signed out of Miami, Derek Cooper, is a stud freshman.
Freshman.
So they're loaded at running back. You got to fix your offensive line. But I'll point this out, though. The last wide receiver to win the Heisman Trophy, if I'm not mistaken, who was the play caller?
Steve Sarkisian.
Steve Sarkisian. Devontae Smith was interesting. You know, the first moment in the spotlight was the winning touchdown pass as a true freshman in the national championship game against Georgia. That was Smith. Do you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. He caught that pass from Tua. Freshman to freshman.
Freshman to freshman.
Yeah.
Okay.
Best game I've ever seen him. Best game I've ever seen in my life. Ever in person. I was there. You were there too.
I was there. Yeah.
I think I texted you because I was up in the nosebleed.
Yeah. I was thinking national championship game. I thought you were talking when they met in the title game.
Yeah, it was the title game in 2018.
No, I wasn't at the title game. I was at the SEC championship.
We're talking about two different games. I meant to say national championship game.
Okay,
The Tua pass in overtime game.
Yes,
that was okay. Yeah.
We're on the same page.
Maybe it wasn't you. I texted. Maybe somebody else. But anyway, yeah, they won that game, and that was Smith. And we don't even think about that. Everybody calls it Tua's pass.
Right.
Because he was off, but that was a freshman that caught it too. Yeah. From the state of Louisiana. But I think the logical choice of Texas has a great offense, like personnel wise, they should. The logical choice there's Manning, because he's I think for them to be hugely successful, you've got to distribute the ball to all these guys. And so it's going to take away from the stats. But I just saw that was a fun little exercise.
That is a fun exercise.
Yeah, no,
as the JC5 always is.
Oh, yeah. So anyway.
I might add. Good stuff. Good stuff. Again, we are powered by Abacare, abacare.com. Promo code Mike Morgan. Save yourself 20% off. Also, Nest and Wild Mattress. Get yourself the most comfortable mattress on the planet, nestandwild.com. I mentioned we'll have Chuck Oliver on next week, Mr. College Football, located here in Atlanta. Chuck does a college football syndicated show every day. And we've had him on, but it's been a couple years. So we need to get him back on. But what made me think of Chuck is I'm starting to just kind of look at the rankings on certain things. And yes, they mean nothing. How little do they mean? Let me take you back to last year at this point. In no particular order, these were the top four quarterbacks on most everybody's board from the SEC. DJ Lagway, Lenora Sellers, Garrett Nussmeier, and Arch Manning. None of them lived up to the hype. Arch, as I mentioned, had his moments and certainly ended on a good note and has everybody excited this year. Nussmeier was dinged up, but even when he was out there, did not play particularly well. He went from a guy that could have been the number one overall pick, and he's not going first round come April in the NFL draft. Lenora Sellers, bad offensive line, no fit with Shula, but clearly regressed overall. But DJ Lagway was just horrifically bad, and he's no longer in Gainesville. They basically said, hey, go ahead and find somewhere else to play.
Can I interject one thing?
Please.
And you can keep going. Three of these four, those teams had significant offensive line issues. Now, Texas got better, right? But early on, you remember the Florida game, they couldn't block. I mean,
correct.
He was running for his life. We know Sellers was running for his life. Nussmeier, like, they lost all those good players, and they didn't replace them with poo.
Right.
He was running for his life. You know, the one that didn't have an excuse in that department, though, was DJ Lagway. And you sort
correct.
Of, you kind of wonder. Florida was supposed to have one of the best offensive lines in the SEC.
Yeah. No, he was just throwing the ball into triple coverage. He was overweight. He didn't work out. It was a recipe on how to fall from grace. And you're right. There's mitigating factors for all the other guys. But for my money, they all regressed in their own way.
Absolutely.
And if you're going to be a top pick in the NFL, be prepared to play for a team that doesn't have a great offensive line, that doesn't have great weapons around you, that has a coach that's on the hot seat, and you have to be better than all that.
Yeah. Except Arch got better. Arch did not regress. Beginning regress relative to the hype.
Yes.
Like everybody, he struggled early, like most young quarterbacks, folks.
Right.
He did put it together, I thought.
He put it together. He realized, like, I don't have 3-4 seconds every snap. I don't have an offensive line that blocks. I don't have a running game, which is still hard for us to compute, right? Texas didn't have a running game. It's like us saying Georgia struggled running. Georgia didn't have a great running game. These are programs we're just assuming are going to have a great running game every year. They did not for whatever reason. So here are the names in no particular order that are on everybody's top three. I'm looking at a CBS poll, I'm looking at an Athlon poll, and I'm looking at Chuck's poll. These particular three are in the top three of all three of them. Trinidad Chambliss, Arch Manning, and Sam Leavitt. I realize Sam Leavitt for a lot of people is the head scratcher. Like, I don't know much about this Sam Leavitt guy. He's good. He's a good player who played for a less than good Arizona State team that will have a chance to shine in an LSU offense that spent, $2.2 billion in NIL in the offseason. I lost count, JC.
$1 billion.
$1 billion. So then in the next tier, you've got a combination of these guys, Gunnar Stockton, Lenora Sellers, John Mateer. that's pretty consensus on the tier two. Some people, Mateer's all over the map, but most have him in the top five.
Yeah, he got
or six.
He broke his hand.
Right, I know. People jumped off that bandwagon quick.
And I'm gonna be honest, Oklahoma sort of fixed their offensive line issues, but they were not good up front again last year either.
Right. Very true.
I mean, he didn't have much time, so I'm gonna cut him some slack. Now I never was a believer. I mean, I thought, well, they only scored 38 points against Illinois State.
Right.
That's my wife's album. I had no idea Illinois State was going to play for a national championship at the time. But then 24 against Michigan, did some good things, but the protection. But, I'd cut him some slack. I think he'll have a pretty good year.
Next year, Marcel Reed, who went from Heisman hopeful, and then the Texas game happened, and it was just like
everybody. And Miami, too.
Yeah. And Miami, correct, yeah. And they jumped off the Marcel Reed bandwagon real, real quick. But he's still a good college player. Mm-hmm. Austin Simmons, remember, he's Missouri now.
Yeah.
Austin Mack, remember, a year ago, nobody had Ty Simpson in like the top 7, 8. He's going to be a first round pick in a couple, well, not even a couple months, a month and a half. I don't know much about Austin. What do you know about Austin Mack? I don't know much.
He's kind of the other guy that came in. He's West Coast. Keelan Russell is the other competitor.
And some people have Keelan starting, so let me point that out too.
Yeah, I don't know which one. I mean, Keelan's a great runner, and he has a live arm. But DeBoer and that offense, it's a passing offense. And so a guy like Ty Simpson or Michael Penix that is accurate and can make plays downfield, that's what they prefer. So I'd have to look into Mack and his arm and all that. But yeah, I'd probably have those two down there too, but to start with.
And again, this is just tier three. It's not the bottom. I'm going to get to the bottom tier in a second, but Reed, Simmons, either Mack or Russell. And then Aaron Filo is hovering around that tier as well, the transfer from Georgia Tech to Florida. And then the bottom tier, Kamario Taylor, Mississippi State, Jared Curtis, Vandy, Kenny Minchie, Kentucky, KJ Jackson, Arkansas, and Tennessee did everything they could to get another year out of Aguilar, but it's going to be George McIntyre. So that's kind of what you're looking at if you were to break it down in tiers. Just a consensus of the three that I've looked at so far. There'll be 100 more of them, but never too early to start talking SEC quarterback play.
Yeah, George McIntyre was a 5-star quarterback.
Well, so was I think Jared Curtis.
Mike McIntyre. Yeah, Jared's a true freshman. George is a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm. We've seen redshirt freshmen that are talented do well.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they've got receiver. Well, did they lose their big guy from Tulane? They've got good talent at receiver at Tennessee. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, somebody's got to be 16th, right?
Somebody's got to be 16th. There's not a bum, quote unquote, on this list.
I don't know much about KJ Jackson. I think Kamario Taylor, with some polish, can be a really good player for Mississippi State. I like when he played last year. He competed really hard. I watched the Egg Bowl, most of it, and they just weren't good enough to win that game. But
Kenny Minchie of Kentucky nearly beat out C.J. Carr for the.
I was way up in that, more up in the air than Notre Dame thought it would be.
Right.
A lot of people have Kentucky as a sleeper. I'm not quite buying it. I think that's a massive shift in philosophy, and. But he's good.
From that, if history, and I'm talking recent history, not like 1988 history, someone from that bottom tier is going to be in the top tier by the end of the year. And someone from that top tier is going to be closer to the bottom.
It could be completely reversed. It could be completely reversed.
And that's what we had this past year. 2025 was the bizarro world SEC quarterback where everybody that got the most hype was a disappointment, and everybody that you kind of poo-pooed, many of those guys. I mean, a lot of it was like Diego Pavia. Is he really that good? Well, he was. No matter what you think of him, he finished second in the Heisman for a reason. I don't care if he's 5'2". He was a great college quarterback for that system. Gunnar Stockton. A lot of people didn't think he was worth anything. Gunnar Stockton played some really good football for Georgia last year. And then, you know, other guys that you just, you didn't think. Ty Simpson, like I said, a lot of people didn't think he'd even had the job. And then he balls and he's going to be a first round draft pick. So it's completely unpredictable, but those are the lists right now as we speak. Yeah. All right. Final couple minutes, because I gotta scoot.
That's right. Yeah. I didn't even realize the time has gotten away from me.
The time has gotten away. Time gets away when we're having fun. Fiber Dimer, Sam. Sam the man always brings the heat on the Fiber Dimer segment. Used cars and night shift. Used cars, I think I saw once. Isn't that Kurt Russell in that? It's a one and done for me. I don't remember much of the movie. Night Shift is the first ever R-rated movie I saw in person when I snuck in way below age. It's when you bought a ticket for a PG, you went down the hall and you saw an R. Did a lot of that as a kid. Probably explains my personality. Night Shift is a dime piece for me. Love that movie. Love Michael Keaton. Henry Winkler, terrific in that movie. But really, Michael Keaton steals the show. That was what's his name? Cunningham's direct. It was his debut, but he directed.
Ron Howard. Yeah.
Ron Howard. Yeah. I always want to call him Opie. So that is a dime piece for me. Good call on those. What else?
Well, used cars. Both of them are fivers for me. Used Cars, hilarious. It does have Kurt Russell in it. It's a Robert Zemeckis film.
Really?
So two award-winning directors, right, directed those two 80s comedies. So it was. They don't make them like they used to, you know.
They don't make them like they used to. Hey, on that subject, I got to mention the passing of Robert Duvall. Okay, so he's involved in the ultimate Ben Franklin series, Godfather 1, Godfather 2. We don't consider Godfather 3 in the same category, right? He passed away, one of my favorite actors of all time. I'm ashamed to say, JC, that there's a lot of his classics that I haven't seen. The Great Santini, I never saw it, but people tell me that is an outstanding movie. I forgot he's in Falling Down. He plays the cop, right? He tracks down. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in Days of Thunder.
God, we mentioned Days of Thunder the other day.
I'm going to give you my underrated dimer for Robert Duvall. It's a movie called A Civil Action, starring John Travolta and Robert Duvall. It's based on a true story on corroded water in a small town in Massachusetts. Look it up. Rent it. I'm telling you, Duvall plays the scumbag attorney defending the water company, or defending the company that polluted the water. In real life, he's terrific. Oh, yeah, Apocalypse Now. Got to mention that. Smell of Napalm, and thank you, Craig. That is absolutely a high piece. The Apostle is good. I only saw it once, but that is it's a terrific performance by him. We can go on and on and on. I mean, I just wonder, when we lose people like Duvall, Clint Eastwood, you know, these are actors that they don't make movies like that anymore. We don't have actors like that anymore in Hollywood. So RIP to Duvall, man. He was one of the best to ever do it.
Absolutely. All right.
Cool. So we'll be back with you next week. We'll start getting into the guest parade with a number of folks out there. JC, some quick intel on how to get this fine podcast if they haven't already.
Yes. Yeah. Go. It's a new podcast channel. So go to JC and Morgan College Football Podcast. Please hit the subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars on Apple. With the changeover from 24/7 Sports, we had to switch our podcast channel. You can also go to @4EverCFB on X. @MorganOnAir is his Twitter handle. JC Sherbert is mine. And also download the Chief Sports app for us and SEC Sunday Night for your college football programming.
I'm going to get this question by a few of our listeners, so let me ask it now. Are we back on iTunes?
Yes, yes. It's just under a different name. So you got to type in, you got to search for JC and Morgan, whereas the old one just says JC and Morgan. It's JC and Morgan College Football Podcast. It's easy to find. And you can also on our Twitter accounts, you can, or X accounts, you can, we'll have the link up there for you. It's back on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Podbean, all those places.
Boom, boom, boom. My thanks again to our producer, Phil Moenex. JC, I know you guys got a show coming up here in another 30 minutes or so. Well, good luck with ITG. Thanks to all of you tuning in. We'll see you each and every week during this off season on another installment. The next one will be 300. Oh, wow. Break out the champagne. Another installment of JC and Morgan. So long, folks.